coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. It is the 2020 finale, and thank God at that.
God.
It can't come soon enough. We could barely even get on this recording without already being triggered with random things going on in our life. So we'll put a wrap on this not so triggered year, recapping our favorite podcast and golf moments of the year as well too. We're going to turn the page in a great way though with this week's guest. It's Ryan Ballingy. Great golf coverage from him at Golf News Net, and he's a great follow on Twitter as well. He's the perfect guest to preview everything golf in 2021 as well. We finish with our massive, extravagant, no, not so crazy New Year's Eve plans. And all of it is brought to you by our friends at Active Body, Mike. And as we turn the corner, it's New Year's resolution season now, Mike. So I don't know what's on your list, but I know for me, it's definitely dropping a few LBS where I can. Not a ton, but just a few. So if that's part of your plans, I encourage you to take a look at the Active 5 unit. I use it every day for a 5 to 10 minute workout. That's it. It's just 5 to 10 minutes a day, not asking for a huge commitment. And it's a great little product that comes with a connection to their exclusive app on your phone. It customizes the workouts for you. It does all that research and puts it into a nice compatible, portable device that you can use anywhere. It's the Active 5 unit. It's Active Body. Our promo code is COL for 20% off. Again, promo code COL for 20% off at activebody.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Groove It Golf. I'm Michael. He's Alex. And Alex, we made it.
Yes, mercifully. You and we made it.
Yeah, I am slightly positive on the outlook of the year when I look at golf. The rest of the year, I'm pretty negative. I do not have COVID.
Yes, we're just like the Christmas ornaments that my lovely wife did for our tree this year. We're official survivors of 2020. We made it through. We made it out alive. So shout out to Austin. Shout out to everyone who's still listening. Because if you're listening,
you made it
as well too. So
it's still a couple days. Things could happen.
So don't walk out into the roads the next couple days if you're listening as well too. Be careful and look both ways.
Wear your mask.
The year was nuts. There was all sorts of stuff that got thrown at us from different parts of our life. But one thing that did allow us to have a little bit of an escape and a constant kind of mental vacay when you and I needed it was golf. Not only talking on here, you and I, and just that therapy each week, but when we got to get out to the golf course and do something safe and outdoors and in nature, like that ended up being a really huge win for me this year. My golf game did not get better, Mike, but in the end, I had a newfound enjoyment for the game even more in 2020.
You know, I certainly played the most this year that I have in a long time.
Yeah.
So that was really nice. And my golf game seemed to improve simply because I was playing more. You know, it's that thing, you just play more and you're going to get better. It's how it sometimes works.
That's right.
And, you know, I think you certainly saw the game of golf in general really had a banner year, because while you couldn't go bowling or you couldn't go to the mall, you could go play 18 holes most places.
And you couldn't gather for football or a baseball pickup game or play basketball in a gym. These things were just off the table for a while this year. So people ended up looking to recreational outdoor sports that are distance, like a tennis, like a golf, things that they can do out in nature. Rounds were up. Sales of clubs were up. I can tell you, just for everyone out there listening, thank you to the newfound group of people that are now listening to us on the Morning Read Podcast Network as well, too. The fans of the game are up and coming in all directions, and it's exciting to see because it's been a part of our life for so long, and now to actually see, you know, new people asking me about the game and saying, hey, you know, this year I went to my first Topgolf and had this experience and enjoyed this, you feel like a proud papa, and it's been a good year for the game at that.
Yeah, and I think while it was really odd to see the professional game come back to TV in June without any fans, there's a lot of positives with that. That means you get to hear more on the course. You get to see these guys interacting. You get to see Beefy Bryson be yelling at a camera.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of things that we got to see that we've wanted out of these golf broadcasts. And we got a lot of it.
It's so interesting because when the whole lockdown was happening and we were pondering how golf was going to return and what it was going to look like, I remember there were moments in those conversations when you and I are like, they're going to play tournaments with no fans. What's that going to be like? And right. We were very skeptical in the moment, but you know, here we are now. We almost kind of don't know any other way at this point of seeing so many tournaments without fans. But you're right. It's given you those amazing caddy player interactions. The network have broke out the drones, which we'll talk about a little bit in our 2020 recap and 2021 preview with Ryan Ballingy. And there were just a lot of cool things that we saw on the broadcast as well, which made us kind of lean into loving the game even more, on course interviews and really seeing the entire property that wasn't surrounded by galleries. So there was a win in that aspect. I want the fans back, and we'll get into that later in the episode. But overall, it was a unique view to see golf sans fans for at least a temporary portion of our lives.
And let's just give a shout out to all the tournament directors who've had to scramble and the schedulers who had to make the new schedule to put all these events in places, including the majors, and those tournament directors that now need to figure out how to make a tournament without anything other than the golf.
Yes, I know. Yeah, and we had that interview with Tracy West a couple of weeks ago where she's still in big time planning mode because she's got no idea, 4 months out here from the Valspar Championship in Florida, what that's going to look like. Will there be any fans at all, if any, or what type of event that's going to be that she's conducting? So everyone's kind of still on edge here for the next few months. I'm looking to see what capacity I'm going to be able to volunteer at the match play in March, and if they're going to allow volunteers and how many and what that's going to look like and what I'm going to need to do to be a volunteer. So there's all sorts of unknowns still, but the unbelievable flexibility with the tour bike, not only to get things up and running safely, you know, there were a couple of hiccups there in July where things got dicey. You remember the Hilton Head Island scare earlier. But we got through that. Positive tests definitely went down, and they really did bubbleize the tour as much as they could as they traveled, and they scrambled and they got most all the tournaments off, which is crazy impressive.
They really did. And of course, we got one of the most unique major tournaments of all time. That is the Masters at Augusta in November. We're never going to see that again. And really was an incredible tournament to see during that time of year. And of course, again, no fans at Augusta. We talked about this when we talked about the Masters this year. It was just so weird. It still is to me that there was no one there, because that's a tournament where the fans are such an integral part of the tournament.
I know. Yeah, this is such a weird schedule. We got the Masters double cheeseburger with the November, April back-to-back here coming our way. So that's very exciting. That's quickly around the corner. Mike, we're just a few weeks away maybe from those CBS commercials promoing the 2021 Masters. We're that close. So that'll be an interesting feature for us going back-to-back. And you're right, seeing it in fall was definitely an interesting look. Fun vibes. We were saying all spring, man, if we can just get through to the summer and there could be an amazing fall sports schedule. Well, some other sports got kind of canceled and postponed left and right, talking about football, but the tour was steadfast and they were able to stay safe and play a lot of the events they promised to. So again, just huge shout out to everyone that made that happen amidst the craziness.
There also was, of course, the social justice push and Black Lives Matter movement that took hold of the country during the lockdown and summer. Cameron Champ really kind of took up the mantle of that on tour.
That was awesome, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Because golf is just, let's just face it, golf is seen as just a traditionally old and curmudgeon-y and white-based sport. And that's the exact stigma that we try and remove. We're trying to bring diversity to this game constantly, every day, in every way that we can. And we encourage that in every corner of this podcast and what we want to see from our PGA Tour golfers as well. And Cameron Champ is embodying that. He spoke out, Harold Varner spoke out, and it was good to see that activism and people really speaking out for what's right. And this wasn't an issue of politics. This is just an issue of right and wrong treatment of human beings. And that's what it came down to. And it was good to see tour players kind of finally give themselves a voice. You know, Tiger and lots of tour stars in the past, Mike, you remember, did a good job at being personalities, but never like getting into anything super serious. I think that veil is finally lifted in 2020, which is nice to see.
Yeah, I think we saw it start in the NBA, where they really started to get more outspoken and really started to get, the players were finally able to get their own voice. And that has spread to the PGA Tour. And it's really about time. I mean, these athletes are leaders and role models in the country, and they need to be allowed to speak their mind and say what's right. And we shouldn't be stifling them simply because they're an athlete. They need to help lead social justice change. And it's great to see the PGA Tour is finally really embracing that.
Definitely. We encourage that messaging from start to finish from all those players and everyone else who's going to speak out or hasn't chosen to and is thinking of it as well. So that was some great golf moments to bookend things in 2020. Let's segue now to us and the podcast specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, this was a great year for us. We, you know, joined on with the Morning Read Content Network, which we love being a part of. We've had a lot of success with different sponsors who we'll talk about in a bit, but let's just first kind of get to the theme that I wanted to get to of kind of this year in our podcast is I found out that golfers are just everywhere, like way outside the game of golf. And I think that showed in a lot of the guests that we brought on, a lot of the personalities that we had, because it just goes to show you that people love to play from all walks of life. And I appreciated showcasing that to everyone out there.
Yeah, you know, I think you had probably one of your best interviews on this podcast with Tanner Beard, who is not someone you'd think to bring on a golf podcast. He's an actor, he's a producer, and but he was a holy moly champion.
Yes, one of many who we've had on here. Shout out to the Holy Moly casting team as well, too. They're just the absolute best because they bring amazing personalities. You're right. That Tanner Beard interview was awesome. And he's got the Tanner Beard golf brand now. Shout out to the TBG White Buffalo logo that he's selling on his merch. I know you love that logo as well, too. So check that out if you haven't already. And we had guests like Ryan Rotman, Ron Del Barrio, the swing coach of the Star. Yeah. Love following him. Larry David's golf swing is getting a lot of play on social media right now. And you and I know exactly where that came from. So shout out to RDB. And those Holy Moly stars, like I mentioned, Colin McCarthy and Mae Brennan and Tanner, you're just really good to have lots of different personalities, you know, that aren't just the, you know, by the book professional golfer. We enjoy having them on, but people outside the game that just love to play as well too, that are just like us.
Yeah, it's great to hear from all different walks of life and just hear how golf, like we say, you don't need to be a professional golfer to enjoy the game. You don't even need to shoot 80 or 70 to enjoy the game. You can shoot 100 or 110 and you can have a good time.
And you don't have to play all the time either. That's a funny myth that a lot of people understand. Is like they think that like because we host a golf podcast that like we're like grinding out there like 6-7 days a week, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. I wish we had the time to do that, Mike. If we could drop everything and do that, I would absolutely do that. But unfortunately, you and I both have full-time jobs. We have families. We have responsibilities that only allow us to get out there every so often. But we love to showcase our love for the game in any way we can, even if it's not on the course.
Yeah. And then of course there's a lot that goes on off the course with the rest of our lives. And for me this year, it was all about baking, really.
Yeah. You really leaned in early because it was kind of like the cliche thing at the beginning was like, everyone's baking a banana bread in March. That was like the thing early in quarter.
I don't want banana bread. It wasn't banana bread.
A. And then you continued with the I'm baking during quarantine theme and you just kind of roll with it. And then you went off into different tree branches and it was an impressive array of treats that you've concocted for everyone in the audience on social media. You're at MWRINC and the podcast is at COL Podcast if you want to follow on Insta, because that's where I've seen some of your nicest creations this year.
Yeah, you know, I've certainly noticed that almost everything I post to Instagram now is a picture of something I've baked. So
you're in that mode. I'm telling you need to start the business in 2021. If there's a resolution, it's that by the end of 2021, I would just like to see some form of online store where people could purchase baked goods from you. I don't know how we're going to figure it out.
If anyone wants to be my angel investor, drop me a DM.
Okay. Doesn't take that much, people out there. If you're interested, I'll be the marketing arm and I'll promo and Mike will get in the kitchen and we'll make this happen. So if anyone's out there looking to invest, holler at us as well about that. It was hashtag always end with food that we kind of established was that brand. And we had some food guests on as well too, which I know you appreciate being a veteran of the Food Network Kitchen yourself. We had, you know, Brandy Malloy and Ali Khan and Roger Mooking and all different sorts of sort of food personalities, which was great for kind of the holiday season and really leaning into what you and I love to do the most, which is just like make an awesome meal and just sit on the couch and enjoy it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's nothing better to me than making the meal you're eating yourself and doing it well and just having fun with it, because ultimately, too, you know, it's OK if you mess up. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? You have to order a pizza. That's all right. Exactly. Not the end of the world.
We'll put a couple of the things I wanted to touch on that will be coming more of a reality in 2021. We're going to have the Playcation series. We'll absolutely continue. Shout out to our friend at the Hyatt Resorts in Texas. We're looking to bring those to some other locations as well too in 2021. So if you're part of a golf country club or resort and you want us to highlight the resort or the course and interview your team and who gets it done and how it gets done and profile you to our audience, be sure to hit us up. We'll also be doing lots more Instagram lives, which have been very successful as well with our guests. And Mike, we have to shout out our go-to sponsors who have been with us through this entire year, Mike. Mm-hmm. During a pandemic, it's not easy for small businesses. We understand that. And we thank Desert Fox Golf. We thank Groovit. We thank great partners like FlightScope and Active Body and all of our other sponsors and affiliates who have helped us broaden our brand. And also they've gotten theirs out in question as well, too. It's been good to sell some units for them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's pretty cool to work with some of these brands that are growing like they are. You know, it's pretty cool to see the Groovit golf brush on the bag of Charlie Woods there, like we did. So.
Right, a lot of full circle stuff with the sponsors. I saw the phone caddies. You just see them kind of sneaky everywhere. When you start following people on golf social media, you know, just like, oh, there's another one. Wow, they're just popping up everywhere. So good to see our friends making it through this tricky year for small businesses. Looking forward to working with them more in the coming year as well. So that's pretty much our cap on the goods. And we try to stay as remotely positive as possible there with our 2020.
You know, if you want our negative, go back and listen to our airing of grievances in last week's episode.
Great during promo our, the archive there.
Thank yeah, during our Seinfeld Festivus episode portion of last week's episode.
Did you, and then you can hear it. I didn't really get into much new. I was watching just as much sports as possible this past week. The Hallmark Christmas movies are winding down on our end. Were you tuned in to anything specifically through this holiday week?
So I was. So Disney's Pixar dropped their new movie Soul, and it is unlike Mulan. It is free on Disney Plus.
You saw Soul. Nice. Okay. Cool. What are your thoughts?
It is easily one of the best Pixar movies. It's in that conversation with the likes of Wall-E and Up and Coco, which was also excellent, and Inside Out. This is like peak Pixar. This is what you expect from a Pixar movie. It was fantastic.
Nice. I'm a big Inside Out fan as well. So that's a good comp to hear. And I saw a Christmas special interview with John Baptiste, who I know is part of that project. So some really cool personalities behind the voices in that movie as well. When I seen, check out the cast. I'm definitely going to give Soul a watch. I appreciate that shout out.
Definitely recommend it. You know what else I recommend, Alex?
What's that?
Everyone to stick around for this interview that we got now.
Yeah, we're turning the page 2020 and we're done with this year. So I was happily ready to talk with someone who's fun and entertaining about like what's to come. Like give me something in the future to look forward to, please. Now we need it more than ever, right?
We're gonna have four major championships this year.
Yes, that's a problem. There you go. please yes, I'm gonna hold you to that. So,
and they're gonna happen when they're supposed to happen.
That's the goal. Yes,
I'm not going to say they're going to have fans because we'll see, but they're going to happen.
Love it.
So, you got to chat with Ryan Ballingy and preview the upcoming golf year. So let's get into that. But first, as always, I want to let you know this conversation is brought to you by Groovit Golf, makers of the Groovit Golf Brush. It's been a pretty incredible product, and it did so well. It sold out. But it's coming back. It's pre-orderable right now. They're shipping units out still. So it's maybe a little bit of a delay, but it's coming out right now. And this is an incredible product because it's got a built-in pump that sprays water or cleaning solution right onto your club face, allowing you for a quick and efficient scrub on the course. It's got magnets, so you can easily pop it off your bag. So when you're doing 90, you know, cart path only, you can take it with you all the way across the other side of the fairway. And it's got a 3-year bristle guarantee. So if you can wear out this brush head in 3 years, you can send it back. You'll get a free replacement. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control the clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groovit, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So check out groovitbrush.com so you can pre-order your brush. Again, that's groovitbrush.com.
Next up on the tee from Washington, D.C., we've got the owner of Golf News Net, who's done coverage for the Golf Channel, NBC Sports. You definitely know him if you're in the golf Twitter sphere as well, too. It's Ryan Ballingy here to preview 2021 in golf on the course of life. Ryan, how you doing today?
Good, Alex. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Definitely. No problem. I'd love to get you on to just kind of set the stage for this next year as we head into a new calendar. Before we dive into 2021, though, the golf year and lots of fans finished. The final thing they saw golf-wise was seeing Tiger Woods and his son, Charlie, compete in the father-son. I'm curious just to get your initial thoughts on that. Were we watching a preview of the next few decades of our lives as golf fans? Where are you sitting on the Charlie Woods hype train right now?
Maybe on the caboose.
I love it.
I try not to get a little bit too far ahead of myself, but I was really cool to watch Charlie and his dad play golf like human beings. I mean, I get a lot of joy out of playing golf with my son, and I could just feel the joy that Tiger was feeling playing golf with his son. And the coverage probably was over the top in some facets, but it was really fun to watch them play golf. Obviously, Charlie is a very gifted golfer. He has some of the best possible influences in the history of golf to be good at it.
Yep.
So he showed a lot of skill. He obviously is a competitive kid. He's been beating up one fellow 11-year-olds all year in junior golf tournaments, and he can play, but there's a long way to go between being Charlie Woods at 11 and Tiger Woods at 44. And there are plenty of examples of offspring of the greatest golfers that we've ever seen. I think about Gary Nicklaus in particular that never even approached how good their dads were. So I think for now, it was great to watch. It was adorable. And we'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, it's exciting, but it's early, definitely. Someone who maybe is a little bit later on the hype train, who I know you enjoy talking about and watching, who we saw as well in that father-son to wrap 2020 golf, Little John Daly. That kid now is a man. He is far from Little John, but he absolutely rips it. I'm sure you're pretty excited based on the tweets I've seen from you about his potential to tear up the college golf scene, because that's coming real soon, right?
Yeah, he's going to Arkansas like his dad, and I like him. Just to watch him play golf. I mean, he is a true grip it and rip it kid, just like his dad. And he's got a great golf swing, a great action. He mashes the ball a long way. I mean, he is kind of the epitome of what junior golf is. And at our club, we have a number of kids who play in very high AJGA events, USGA events, stuff like that. And to play golf with them is a completely different experience than what it was like when I played high school golf, when drivers weren't even 300 CCs yet. And for these kids who have technology, who have TrackMan, who have all kinds of things at their disposal that I didn't when I was a teenager, they're just so much more advanced. They're so much more aware. They're so much more confident in playing golf. And you can see that in Little John Patrick Daly II. I mean, he's going to have a lot of fun in college, I am certain, because I'm sure his dad taught him how to not only be a good golfer, but also conduct himself in social settings.
Yep. Son, don't do some of the things that I did. Here's how not to, basically.
I don't know if he told him not to do it. I would venture to say, having spent some time with John, that he told him just to make sure you know how to cover your tracks a little bit.
Yes, cover your tracks. There you go. Love that. Good stuff. So again, it's Ryan Ballingy. Your Twitter feed is great, which is where I originally found you. Very innovative, breaking golf content all the time for anyone who wants to tune into what's going on in the game. Recently, one thing that's really cool that you highlighted on your Twitter profile, which I think kind of slipped under the radar, is you let us know that you had the pleasure of taking over a Twitter profile, the Tiger Tracker, which a lot of people know as kind of the like day-to-day goings on of Tiger Woods and what he does event to event and hole by hole. I'm curious what that experience was like for you and which events you got to be the Tiger Tracker for.
So I got to be the Tiger Tracker at two events, at least that I recall. One was at the 2012 Players and one was at Memorial in 2012. So Tiger won that one, at least. It was, first of all, it was kind of in its nascency at that time. You know, Twitter wasn't really where it is today, but it was just starting to become more of a part of the public consciousness. And starting this Tiger Tracker account was really a brilliant idea. Tiger was, what, you know, as Brandel Chamblee always says, Tiger is the needle. he was back then, of course. And, you know, the idea of tracking him to some percentage of the golf population was sounded really annoying because you couldn't stop covering the guy. But for most people who are golf fans, he was the biggest traffic driver. So why not just give into it and cover the most important guy, the most followed guy? And just running that account was really interesting at the time for a lot of reasons. One, obviously, it's Tiger. You get the thrill of being able to follow Tiger inside the ropes and experience what it's like to see a crowd following Tiger Woods for 18 holes, which is in and of itself.
Yeah, the gallery's intense.
It's wild. And then people who were hip to Twitter at the time and realized there was this account, they would try to figure out who you were. And they didn't know Golf Channel staff from USA Today, from ESPN. I mean, they just didn't know. So they would just sometimes yell, "Tiger Tracker," and see if someone would, you know, turn their head around. And if it was one person, like, "Oh, you're the Tiger Tracker." You know, they would try to get you that way. I thought that was pretty clever.
Myth busted, right? They tried.
And people would get mad from Twitter because you're trying to do play by play of Tiger's round, and you're watching shots from almost always where he's hitting them, and you don't have the benefit of shot link to be able to say, "Oh, he hit that one from 156 to 8 feet." You go, "Well, it looks like he hit an 8 iron from 150 ish to, I don't know, 20 feet. And you keep walking, and people respond, "Oh, it's 9 feet, 7 inches, you dolt." Or, you know, people would get mad that you weren't exact because you didn't have a laser in your hand to do
it. Yes, of course. Yep.
That's how a free service works. So, but the experience was really interesting because, of course, there wasn't just one Tiger Tracker. Depending on the tournament, obviously, when I was with Golf Channel, people rotated who covered tournaments. Not everyone covered the same ones. So the idea that there was a singular Tiger Tracker that anyone ever thought that was even possible was hilarious, because if you just followed the Golf Channel staff, you would have kind of figured out that not everyone goes to the same, to every tournament. So
right. How
could it be the same person doing Tiger Tracker all of these years? But to come full circle to it now that, you know, Tiger Tracker's future is in doubt, whatever that turns out to be. It's kind of sad. I mean, it was a Twitter phenomenon for years, and the Golf Channel team took it and ran with it for 8-9 years, well beyond what I was doing at the beginning with it as a small part of it. And they built up an incredible following, and that it feels like it has been kind of mismanaged into the ground is kind of sad to me.
Yeah, it is. And all those corporate America plebs like myself who have been stuck in the cube and are 5 spreadsheets deep and can't get the stream open, we relied on the Tiger Tracker at times during the week to get those Thursday and Friday updates. So I appreciate that service. And it was cool to see you be a part of it. Well, let's get to some 2021 storylines. It's a perfect segue regarding Tiger, because something interesting happened. I double checked this to make sure it's right. I think we had a winless Tiger, a winless Rory, and a winless Brooks Koepka. A lot of big names didn't win in 2020. I'm curious just your thoughts on that stat specifically, and maybe out of those guys, who do you see maybe propelling and winning the most here as we flip the calendar to 2021?
I'm not as surprised that Tiger didn't win this year. A comeback's only going to last so long. And I think we kind of started to see some signs toward the tail end of 2019, and certainly before the pandemic started in 2020, that maybe the train was slowing down a little bit. The reality is he's going to be a 45-year-old man in 9 days. And that's going to be hard for anybody, whether you've had 4 back surgeries or not, to be competitive on the modern PGA Tour. So I think that's not necessarily all that surprising. But on the right golf courses, Tiger can be competitive. In the right setting, Tiger can be a winner. For Rory, I think I'm a little surprised he didn't win, just because he just seems to find a way to win one. I don't even know how to better explain it than that. Yeah, but
kind of fall into one.
Like every year, there's one week where he's just better than everybody. And when he plays that way, he's impossible to beat. And that kind of got transferred to Dustin Johnson, basically, at the end of the year, which was, well, that guy showed up, so no one's going to win except him. And I think Rory has become accustomed to the kind of the Tiger treatment, and he cares about it. He cares that there are people watching. He likes entertaining people. It matters to him that thing. There's a sense of normal. And I think he also thinks a whole lot more about what I won't say he thinks about it more than other golfers, but it affects him more than other golfers. What is going on in his personal life, whether he's about to become a dad like he did this year, or whether there's just bad stuff going on in the world. I think he thinks about those things more than a lot of people.
Interesting. Yeah.
That affect him a lot more because I think he's a relativist. I mean, he thinks about his place in the world a little bit differently than maybe some other people in golf. And for a lack of a better thing, that's great as a human being, but not necessarily as a professional golfer, where you kind of have to be selfish to be able to achieve your goals. And definitely. For Brooks, I think Brooks is still just getting back to trying to figure out physically how to be Brooks Koepka, the guy that won four majors in, you know, a couple year span. Because he's, since last year, I mean, last summer, you know, with the knee issue and then getting it scoped and fixed and then immediately getting it re-messed up. I mean, that basically took him on an 18-month downward spiral, and it, relatively speaking, because he's still Brooks Koepka. But I think he started to show signs that maybe he's got it back. And now it's just a matter of building that confidence that, okay, I am back. I can play the golf that I played that won me four majors. And I think we saw signs of that at the Masters. I think that was good to see. And by the time we get to Augusta next April, I have a feeling he'll be closer to where he wants to be.
Yeah, it was a strange year indeed, but I think we'll definitely see some of those mainstays back up on top of the leaderboards a little bit more often. Obviously, one of the weird things that we got used to was the tournaments just having no fans, generally speaking. There were a few moments where we had small clapping galleries. But what's just your quick thoughts on what it's been like watching these empty tournaments without galleries? Have you enjoyed it more, or are you missing the roars in spots?
I think at the beginning, I enjoyed it a lot more than most people. I thought it was really interesting. And I think it's just interesting to observe. It's something we've never done before. It's completely different. And from a television perspective, I thought CBS did a good job of trying to come up with ways to make the coverage different in reaction to that there was no people, that they could actually use drone footage because they didn't need FAA approval with so many people there. They had mid-round interviews because no one was there to bother the players, and the players were just kind of lonely. So that kind of worked. And then I think over time, the novelty of having nobody there went away for the fans and for the players alike. And it was like, okay, we miss them, but now we've got to get down to business. We are in the money point of the year because the year didn't really change from a financial perspective other than the PGA Championship being in August and the US Open being in September, but you still had this very concentrated part of the year where a lot was to be decided. Three major championships with the Masters in November, but two bookending the FedEx Cup playoffs, which were still worth $65 million. So even though there was no crowd to kind of a build up certain moments, I still think the golf mattered. And I still think Dustin Johnson would have been the best golfer regardless. I think he was kind of the perfect guy to be the FedEx Cup winner and then subsequently the Masters winner in a time when, you know, there weren't crowds, because I don't think he really cares whether there are people there or not.
That's his disposition.
Just how he looks. I don't know if he actually is that way, but yeah, I'm sure he cares to a degree, but I think he played the same for, you know, a feral hog pack going by versus, you know, 10 deep galleries. So
yes,
maybe he was the perfect golfer for this moment because of that.
Well put. Ryan Ballingy again, Golf News Net. What do you think is the first tournament, maybe we're looking spring, summer, before we see some sort of normalcy in terms of galleries events, first tournament where you want to see a big crowd back on the calendar next year?
My guess is the tour hopes that they can come full circle with the players and have some semblance of fans there. Florida, obviously being what it is in terms of governance, pretty wide open at this point. Ron DeSantis doesn't even seem to care what's happening. So yeah. I think his goal is to try to, and one and only goal is about the economy in the state of Florida, which obviously relies really heavily on tourism, and people come to watch the players. So I think that's probably the tour's hope and also fear at the same time, but hope that they could come back and say, okay, at the players, the place where this all stopped, we can resume it. That would probably be their first goal. But I think it really just depends on where we are with vaccines. I know we now have two between Pfizer and Moderna. You know, we could have as many as four or five by the time we get to February or March, depending on how some trials come out. We could have a whole army of people getting vaccinated on a daily basis. And maybe by the time we get to the Masters, that you could have some limited patrons there, because the Masters being who they are, they could say, we'd love to have you, but you have to have proof of a vaccination and you got to carry a mask around with you just in case we tell you got to wear one.
So. Yeah, definitely. There's probably not a tougher door to get through in terms of getting.
They can set all of the ground rules. They don't need the money. So if they want the people there, if they want those patrons, they can set their ground rules and say, okay, if you want to come, we're happy to have you, but this is what you've got to do. And that might even be a good thing for broader America to say, okay, if the Masters cares that much about getting a needle in the arm to come watch people play golf outside, then maybe I should do that. And that maybe sets the stage for what I hope by the time we get to the summer, maybe by the time we get to the US Open, it'll feel more like, you know, we can have crowds of substantial sizes, maybe not full size, but maybe 50 or 75% of size, have those kinds of crowds, and maybe have a US Open on Father's Day at Torrey Pines that sort of resembles what we know.
That is a great venue for the US Open as well, too. Excited for Torrey in June. Let's touch on a couple other tours as well, too. LPGA, which I know you follow very closely, and we've had some LPGA players on the podcast recently. There has been a lot more attention on women's golf specifically this year. The demand's been there. The ratings are up. Talk to me about what you've seen in the growth in women's golf and this mega schedule that I know you touched on your Twitter that looks really impressive, and it's an encouraging sign for the growth of the women's golf. What's the most exciting thing for you that you're watching for on the LPGA in 2021?
I mean, I'm very happy for the LPGA. I mean, I think I did the one and only ever LPGA podcast many years ago. And I have always been a fan of the product. They have always been so available and receptive to any idea to promote their sport. That's a good one. And for that, I've always been grateful. And the players are just really, really good. They're incredibly gifted players. Women's golf is creating a back channel of future talent. You've got obviously the Korean LPGA, which is the real true pipeline of major champions, apparently. You've got the Symetra Tour, which is very healthy, thanks to some great leadership from Mike Nichols. You've got the investments in the Ladies European Tour, which is starting to pay off pretty quickly, again, as a kind of a feeder to the LPGA. The pipeline has never been bigger and deeper, and the talent's never been as far flung, as wide. It's really fun to watch on a week-to-week basis. And that they put together a global schedule with 34 events and a Solheim Cup and a record amount of prize money the year after a global pandemic basically wiped more than half of that off. That's just incredible to me. Especially if you think about the European Tour schedule, which, the European Tour did incredible things to be able to put together a calendar in 2020. And the one they have in 2021 is better, but it nowhere near resembles the one they had in 2019. And that's definitely not the case for Mike Wan's LPGA Tour. So I think that's awesome. I'm glad that there are more eyeballs on the LPGA. I hope that 15, 20 years worth of proselytizing about watching women's golf kind of means something to somebody. But there's also still a lot of barriers because Golf Channel has slashed the budget for the LPGA production. They don't really get a whole lot of goodies to kind of make the LPGA look like a bigger deal, because they just don't treat the LPGA like a big deal. They put it on tape delay. They give their windows away to PGA Tour events when they feel the need, and you know, stuff like that happens. And it communicates to the golf fan that maybe not as familiar with the LPGA, it's not worth your time. And I consistently say this, if you treat the LPGA like it's a big deal, more golf fans will think it's a big deal. They won't think of it as an also-ran. They won't think of it in the way they think about the PGA Tour champions. They're like, oh, that's nice. I'll watch it if I have some time. Make it appointment viewing if you treat it like it's important. And definitely. I would say that the U.S. Women's Open is a perfect example of that, where you had on Saturday three different platforms to watch the U.S. Women's Open. You had to watch 90 minutes on Golf Channel, or excuse me, 2 hours on Golf Channel, 90 minutes on Peacock just to make you watch it there, and then go to NBC for the final few hours of it. And it just, that kind of thing is emblematic of how NBC Universal at times treats the LPGA, and I don't know that they have a good alternative, but hopefully the product continues to speak for itself and more people get interested in it.
Yes. The coverage gap on Twitter. It's always a big conversation on golf Twitter. And I know you and I are following it very closely. So
I truly don't think people mind streaming stuff. I don't care.
Yeah.
I think if you're under like 70, you don't really, maybe that's too high of an age, but I think if you're under 70, you don't mind streaming stuff. Like, you know how to use streaming services. If you don't, I can't help you. But I think if you're under 70, you know how to do that. But it was just the gratuitousness of saying, okay, the day after we put it on Peacock and then NBC, we're going to make you watch this on three different platforms every 90 minutes. And there's no way you can hold an audience together that way. It's hard enough. Yeah. To do that. I mean, they do it on the PGA Tour because people know the early coverage is on Golf Channel. The good stuff's on the afternoon. You're a hardcore fan, you watch Golf Channel from 1 to 2:30. And then from 2:45 on, you watch the network coverage, which are the two choices it's on. But for this, it just felt like, all right, well, we're just going to make you go to Peacock because we want you to use Peacock. And until that all gets sorted out, that just feels like a slap in the face of people who are interested in the LPGA product.
One other tour I want to touch on, which we talk about a lot on the podcast, is the European Tour. We just love how ahead of the time they are. They're very innovative with their content. And I know one big story that came out recently was kind of this alliance between the European Tour and the PGA. We just touched on it briefly, but for golf fans who are just kind of learning about the European Tour and how everything connects, it sounds like there's going to be kind of more of a world-based schedule that they're striving for. What does this alliance mean, like, potentially for European Tour eyeballs and the tours coming together?
It's a good question. I think there's still kind of a TBD on that, right? The formality piece of it was that the PGA Tour bought a minority stake in the European Tour Productions company. So now they technically own a piece of the European Tour through the production company. But that investment could be taken as a sign that they're trying to financially help the European Tour. I don't really know how to read that, but that's how I would read it. And then this alliance that they've come up with, because now they've got Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, on the board of the European Tour, although not vice versa with Keith Pelley. But and I think that's worth noting because that's how the PGA Tour rolls. But, you know, have Monahan on the board. And then I think if you're really paying attention in the weeds, you would probably have noticed that all of a sudden the PGA Tour started tweeting about the European Tour's tournament, the season-ending event in Dubai, where for 20 years before that, or for infinity before that, they never would have acknowledged that the European Tour was playing, much less that their biggest tournament was being contested, and they would talk about it from their social accounts and their website.
I think that
tells you something about where the alliance is going, that there's going to be an actual acknowledgement that the European Tour exists, that there's going to be an effort to try to bring them together to make the European Tour's biggest events either co-sanctioned or just outright sanctioned, and maybe try to build something that resembles not necessarily a world tour that you got to play, but options for players who are European based or European Tour natives to earn FedEx Cup points, to earn opportunities to play in US based events based on their performance and maybe the highest European Tour events. And ultimately, It could mean they take over the European tour. I mean, that could happen. That was the thought. Yeah. Maybe that when they entered a marketing alliance with the LPGA, that was going to happen. So far, that hasn't materialized. I don't even really know the tangible benefits of it yet. I don't think anyone in the public does. So mm-hmm. I think there's, if the LPGA deal is the model, I don't know what the end result is. If it's something completely different and the clues that they've given us seem to suggest that it is, then maybe we're heading towards something a little bit more unified. And whether that's good or not for professional golf in the long haul, where the PGA Tour fundamentally has a monopoly on the biggest tours in the world, I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but I feel that's the direction we're heading.
Okay. Good notes from Ryan Ballingy again, capping off good storylines across a few different tours in golf. Again, Ryan Ballingy on Twitter. It's also Golf News Net as well. Let's wrap with just a few real quick questions. Just give me 5 or 10 second thoughts here. The first one being, we touched on some terms where we could potentially see some fans in spring. What's maybe just a random tournament in 2021 that you're most excited to watch here as we look towards the spring months and the Masters?
The Open. I miss the Open. We got all three majors this year. We got three majors this year in the United States, and we didn't get the one overseas. I miss watching Lynx golf, miss getting up early for that.
Good stuff. And then we talked about the TV coverage gap, Twitter sphere, which is my favorite overdone storyline on golf Twitter, but I know you follow a bunch of them. Do you have any other notables that you just can't get enough of in terms of just completely overdone stories on golf Twitter?
I mean, we overdo everything on golf Twitter, don't we? I think Charlie Woods is probably gonna be the next overdone thing here going into the new year. And then we'll try to see what normal service resumes once we get back to the PGA Tour schedule.
Love it. Again, and the final question we love to ask is our 19th hole question, which is perfect because you have the 19th hole show as well. So the question is, when you're done either covering or done playing 18 holes yourself and you get into the clubhouse, what's your go-to order in terms of like a meal and drink in the 19th hole?
At my club, right now we have a beer called Raging Bitch, which is actually one of my favorite IPAs in the world. It's by a brewery called Flying Dog.
Nice forward title there. I like it.
So I love that. And they make a really good steak quesadilla. So after a while, you know, not having a whole lot of energy, I'll get a steak quesadilla and a Raging Bitch.
Nice. Great combo indeed. Again, Ryan Ballingy hopping on to preview 2021 in golf. Thanks again, everyone. Check out Golf News Net and looking forward to seeing more of your content in the new year.
Thanks, Alex, for having me on. Appreciate it.
That interview with Ryan Ballingy is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. It is a one-of-a-kind phone holder for golfers designed to mount right onto the golf cart. Phone Caddy works seamlessly with really any phone model. It Velcros onto the cart in seconds, so you can keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy. It is easily the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. Now that I've had one and I continue to use it when I play, Alex, I don't know why I never had this before.
It's the real deal. It really is.
One of the best golf accessories ever. It really is. And right now, you can save 20% off your purchase with the promo code Course of Life. Again, with the promo code Course of Life, you get 20% off your purchase of the Desert Fox Phone Caddy, including their Patriotic line, typically excluded from any deal. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com, get your phone caddy, use promo code Course of Life to save 20%. Again, that's promo code Course of Life for 20% off your Desert Fox Phone Caddy at desertfoxgolf.com. Great interview there with Ryan Ballingy. Interesting, you know, it's going to be interesting to see fans coming back, what kind of policing we're going to have on whether you had a vaccine or not. How is this going to work to get people back in the crowds?
Yeah, that is because he mentioned the tour is going to have one set of policies and we don't know how that's going to look tournament. That could be a state to state thing. But then there's just organizations like the Masters. They are on their own and they can do whatever they want. So they could have really unlimited policies set in place to get people on the grounds of Augusta National. I'd get 10 vaccines if it meant I got to walk the Masters ground for the tournament week. So I am committed to that. If that's what it takes to get into the Masters, it'll be interesting to see how those policies do take form in the next few months, though, as hopefully everything digresses in terms of the virus and this vax actually works for things like getting fans back at PGA tournaments.
We will see what happens and let you know on this podcast. And if you want to hear it from us, you can let us know how much you love us. You can rate us, subscribe to us, leave us a comment on your favorite podcast app. We appreciate it. We want your love and affection.
We only need it once a week too. We just need it once a week for 2021. Yeah, that's it. We're harmless.
Yeah, we know this next year is going to be better, so we want to know that you appreciate us, and just listening to us and subscribing to us is all we need. That's all we need right now.
Definitely,
that's it. Because Alex, you're now focused on college football and the bowl season.
I am. Well, I'm just trying to get over that 55% promise that I made back in August.
Yeah. How realistic is that looking right now?
And right now, it's looking like I'm going to have to hit about 60-something percent for the rest of bowl season. I've been hot picking these random bowl games. There is absolutely no rhyme or reason between who's going to show up for these meaningless bowl games, but for some reason, I'm picking them well right now. So
just do the Lisa Simpson method. Just pick the mascot that would win in a fight.
Yeah, I don't mind trying that for a couple of these. I mean, I've been on the Camellia Bowl on Christmas Day that I'm sure no one was watching between Marshall and Buffalo. I have watched all sorts of random college football in the last week, but it's been successful. You can follow my picks on Twitter at CorsoLife1. We're heading into the playoffs. New Year's Day evening, we've got Bama and Notre Dame. That's going to be an absolute murdering by the Crimson Tide from Alabama. So they're going to advance, and then they're going to play Clemson just like they do every single year, Mike. So nothing changes despite the fact that the world's upside down. Bama is still going to play Clemson for the national championship, just like always.
Yep, I think that's right. But what's not like always, we've said it before, I'm going to say it again. Your Patriots are out.
Dead.
They're done.
Dead.
Finished. They're dead in the water. Nothing else matters anymore. Right. They're going to be right in the middle of the pack for the draft. So who knows what's going to happen there.
Yep.
But my Giants have two possibilities right now. They could win the NFC East, or they could end up having the number three pick in the draft.
That is an amazing spectrum of possibilities heading into week 17 for the New York Giants. I don't know if it's a first, but they could potentially be a 6-10 division championship. And we joked about this for months, Mike. It's almost like
basically
infuriating me how much we talked about this for months about how horrible this division was. Yeah. And I remember vividly saying 6-10 could win this division. And we were not crazy.
And what you're actually going to have, if the Giants win at home against the Cowboys, and the Eagles beat the Washington football team. Yeah, I know, which is not a good sign for Washington. So if the Giants, the Cowboys, and Washington will all be at 6-10, and the Giants would win the head-to-head tiebreaker because they're 3-1 head-to-head against Dallas and Washington.
This is amazing.
So
we're heading into the new year, and the Giants are still alive. That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just incredible. I also saw something that I just want to touch on real quick that I thought was pretty peak, quote unquote, normal.
Yes.
The Browns losing to the Jets it's just like ending everything for them.
Yeah, that was great. And then and also in turn ending the Jets' chances at Trevor Lawrence and getting the number one pick. It was beautiful because it's almost like neither team wanted to win, but for different reasons. It was horribly amazing. Yeah.
It's just crazy. Let's hashtag always end with food.
For the final time in 2020. Food has got us through a lot this year, for sure. We talked about that at the top of this episode, but plans for New Year's Eve, not going to be super magical and extravagant. No, I'm not hitting up a nightclub and fist pumping the night away with hundreds and hundreds.
Why not?
Of people. I don't know. Yeah, I just heard something was going on that we want to stay home for, but it's going to be a dinner with the wife and the dog at home. I'm making baked stuffed shrimp, which is a classic recipe of my mom's. I'm going to do some pigs in a blanket as a great appetizer. Lots of drinks because I think I'm going to do sober January like I have the last few years. So it's going to be an alcohol-fueled night watching Ryan Seacrest on the TV for hours upon hours upon hours.
Not a bad way to spend the evening, I guess.
Well, what do you have in store menu-wise? I know you are, let's see, I'm trying to think, New Year's, I feel like you maybe lean towards the snack apps route instead of the traditional meal.
We are going to go snacky apps. We're going to do some bacon-wrapped water chestnuts.
I just did them last week, and they went very well for me on Christmas Eve, so I wish you luck.
I believe we're doing wings. I think wings is in there. We're gonna do some dip. I think we're also planning some sort of adult Lunchables board, aka charcuterie.
Yes, Lunchables. I like that.
And it'll be an early bedtime because I got to be at work the next morning.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like I'm. Here's the thing: is like I'm still gonna stay up till midnight, but the only reason why is just because like I just don't have to work like the next few days, and then I have nothing better to do. Like. But there's absolutely no motivation for me to stay up till midnight. I'm just merely doing it just because I know I'll be woken up by fireworks in my neighborhood anyway, I guess. So
yeah, that's true. There's that point where it's like I either need to go to bed at like 9:30, 10 o'clock so I can be asleep before the fireworks go off, or else I'm going to bed at 1.
There's a lot of people in America that have no clue what we're talking about, but if you live in a certain part of the country, your neighborhood has fireworks at midnight.
I don't get this thing in the South, maybe it's just a Georgia thing or a Savannah thing, while we're on fireworks real quick and ending with food. They do fireworks at Mother's Day here, and I just don't get it.
Wow. Interesting.
I don't get it.
I mean, I don't.
I love my mother, but I'm not going to shoot off fireworks for her. So
I don't hate it, but I don't get it either. That's a mysterious one. If you have the answer to that, please message us on Twitter. I'm at CorsoLife1. You're at MWRINC. Again, that puts a wrap on our 2020 recap. We're now all going to see you in 2021. Thank you for tuning in, listening, and supporting our sponsors the whole way. We'll see you next week.